The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
And we'll start with the state-by-state gardening website. This article is Getting in Shape by Susan Jason. A little planning ahead can maximize your enjoyment and minimize headaches when dealing with your landscape, maintenance in particular. A simple concept, but most often overlooked. This particularly applies to the layout and design of your planting beds. What could be so hard? It isn't hard, actually. It's quite easy when given some forethought. For example, a planting bed with square corners. They are easily made with straight-edged materials, but typically, they're more time-consuming when it comes to mowing and trimming. Consider the curved garden shape. Curves are often considered more organic or natural, and in a garden border, mowing can be easier, but only if done correctly. Particularly true when using a riding mower. It also makes more work when mowing with a push mower. If the radius of the curve is smaller than the turning radius of your lawnmower, you've created a trimming nightmare that will take a lot of the fun out of mowing. In the case of a riding mower, be aware of the turning radius of your mower. If you're not sure of it, make as tight a circle as you can with the mower and measure the radius. If you have a zero-turn radius mower, you still have maneuvering room to consider. Either case, always design your planting beds so you can mow in a continuous motion without having to stop and start to get into all those tight little turf areas. General rule of thumb is be sure your curves are never tighter than a 6-foot radius. The wider the radius, the more sweeping the curves, the more pleasing design, not to mention easier care. Where your garden edge meets pavement, whether driveway, a sidewalk, or a patio area, the transition can take several forms. The edging simply tees into the hardscape, or the edging curves and seems to disappear into the edge of the hardscape. There are pros and cons to both approaches. The tee transition. Pros. The T makes an abrupt, clean edge and makes a strong definition to the planting bed. Con. When mowing, one will have a 90-degree turn to make with this transition. The curved transition. The pro. It makes mowing very easy as one follows the gentle curved edge as it meets the hardscape edge. Con. It makes growing plants in the narrow transition area very difficult. There's no right or wrong, just a difference in style and choice. Keep the radii in mind when mulching trees. Even smaller trees will grow large, so start by giving them some extra room and mulching around them at the same radius as your mower. If the bare mulch area seems too much, plant annuals in the mulched area until the tree grows. With the mulch, you're also protecting the trunk of the tree from lawnmowers or string trimmers that can damage bark and ultimately kill your young tree. Probably one of the most common mistakes made by gardeners is lining the edge of the driveway with plant material. Most driveways are quite narrow. Typically, driveways are 20 feet wide, allowing two vehicles to be parked side by side. However, this does not allow for the 4 to 5 foot space required to open a vehicle door and to step out of the vehicle. Result? Crushed plants. If you're ever tempted to soften the edge of your driveway with a border, be sure that your guests will not be trampling your hard work. If you have an oversized driveway that has extra space for egress from vehicles, be sure to plant your greenery away from the edge of the concrete. Talking about sidewalks, it is best to have, at a minimum, a 54-inch wide sidewalk for the main approach to your home. Most residential walkways are 48 inches wide and can be found as narrow as 36 inches. Two people walking comfortably side by side typically requires 54 inches. Whenever possible, keep the approach to your home grand and reduce the width of the more utilitarian areas if possible. And as you plan for visitors, be sure to avoid narrow turf areas where a mower cannot fit. This makes for more maintenance. Generally, curves are easier to maintain, the broader, more sweeping forms being easiest. Reserve straight lines for those formal gardens where you fully expect to spend extra time on maintenance. Some of the greatest gardeners are built on geometry of angles and lines, so if that's your style, by all means, make the most of it in your, and then enjoy. And now, from the Raleigh News and Observer, Find Surprises in Your Landscape by Nancy Brakey. After a few weeks of cold, gloomy, wet weather when there was little to draw us outdoors, it was fun to go looking for surprises in the landscape this week. They were there, too. Lovely little flowers, such as winter honeysuckle, opened to reveal their lovely scent right on time. Hardy ferns, such as the reliable autumn, looked fresh as a spring day, even though the fronds had emerged many months ago. Plus, there are the surprises. Camellias that hunkered down and kept their buds closed tightly through the coldest weeks are now starting to open again. A joyful sight. I am particularly impressed by the beautiful Lady Claire Camellia, whose first buds opened in early November and continued into December. Some open blooms were lost to the deep freeze, but the buds survived without damage. They began to open a couple of weeks ago, showing no sign they ever endured those very cold nights. I was surprised they held up so well. Perhaps an even bigger surprise is how well most things, including broad-leaved evergreens, stood up to the very cold temperatures. Some browning of the edges of leaves, such as viburnums, appears alarming at first, but should not cause worry. Fresh growth this spring will overcome it. It might worry you to see these brown edges, but if you start cutting on spring-flowering plants, you will likely lose flower buds that should open normally and on time. That would be a bad surprise. These survivors show that we got away pretty well despite the temperatures below 10 degrees. That is largely because of the landscape plants being in full dormancy at the time. This is so different from the freeze that occurred last April when many plants, notably hydrangeas, had broken dormancy, were starting to grow, and suffered mightily from temperatures that were merely in the low 20s. Covering the plants with bed sheets proved helpful and worth the effort in protecting tender foliage and buds those few nights. Fescue lawns are getting ready to break dormancy as well and can benefit from mid-February from lawn fertilizer suited for cool season lawns. The fescue grass starts to grow surprisingly early in the Piedmont and needs fertilizer for good growth through the spring. If you have bare spots in the lawn, give them attention with a bit of seeding and fertilizing as well. If you are working on bare spots, remember to dig up the area with your shovel to make it loose and give seeds a place to lodge closely and sink the new tiny roots. Another nice surprise for spring. Now from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. Preparing a new garden plot. Eliminating weeds and getting the soil ready for your flowers and vegetables are important first steps in growing a successful garden. Time spent in preparation reduces the time that you'll have to spend maintaining and weeding your garden over the growing season. Tools and materials. String and wooden stakes, spade, glyphosate herbicide, optional, hoe or mattock, steel garden rake, soil testing sample kit, soil amendments as required, a garden fork or rototiller. Vegetable gardens and most flower beds require at least 6 hours of full sun each day. Choose a level spot with well-drained soil if possible. Thick grass or vigorous weed growth usually indicate soil drainage and nutrient levels that will support healthy garden plants. Outline the new garden plot with string and stakes, a hose, or a line of powdered limestone. Remove existing lawn by slicing under the sod with a spade and cutting it into manageable pieces. Add the pieces to your compost or use it to patch bare spots elsewhere. Kill weeds with glyphosate herbicide, pull them by hand, or chop them with a hoe or mattock and rake them up. If time permits, you can smother grass and weeds with old carpeting or black plastic anchored to the ground. For best results, leave the covering in place for several weeks of hot weather. Send a sample of garden soil to a private or cooperative extension office soil testing lab for nutrient and pH analysis. Call the lab or a local garden center for a collection kit and instructions on how to collect the sample. Test results will tell you which minerals and pH amendments your soil needs. Add amendments. Adjust the soil pH by adding ground limestone or sulfur as recommended by the soil test results. Improve the soil fertility, clay soil drainage, and sandy soil water holding capacity by adding organic material such as compost, well-rotted livestock manure, or composted fir bark. Apply a 1 to 2 inch layer of organic material over the garden. Work the amendments into the top 6 to 12 inches of soil with a rototiller or a garden fork. Break up large clods and remove rocks and roots. Work the soil only when it is dry enough to crumble easily after squeezing, never when it is saturated with water. Tips. The best time to eliminate weeds and grass is the season before you plan to plant your garden. You can do it just prior to planting, too, but may have more weeds pop up throughout the growing season. Do-it-yourself soil test kits work best for detecting the soil pH, but give only a rough idea of the nutrient levels. Professional tests provide more thorough and accurate information and recommendations. From the Triangle Gardener, Great Evergreens for Screens and Hedges by Charlotte Glenn. Need some privacy? Want to screen out the view in your neighbor's yard? Consider planting a living fence of evergreen shrubs, but look beyond the common disease-plagued Leyland cypress. Hollies are great. In the southeast, hollies are a favorite for a long-lived, attractive, low-maintenance screen. Several varieties are available that work well as hedges because of their upright growth habit. The varieties Nellie Stevens, Oak Leaf, and Emily Bruner all produce dense, dark green foliage year-round, and red berries that persist through fall and winter. Each of these varieties grows to 15 to 20 feet tall and 8 to 10 feet wide. Hollies grow best in sites with sun to part shade and well-drained soil, and are drought-tolerant once established. Deer may browse the tips of holly branches, but are unlikely to cause severe damage to these spiny-leaved plants. Upright shrubs for narrow spaces. Upright evergreens work well as screens in narrow spaces because they take up little horizontal space. Two of the narrowest evergreens available are Spartan juniper and Emerald abrevitae, both of which grow 15 feet tall and only 3 to 4 feet wide. The main difference in these two plants is the conditions in which they prefer to grow. Spartan is great for well-drained sites because it is very drought-tolerant, whereas Emerald prefers moist soils. Both grow best in full sun. If you need a columnar evergreen for a shady site, consider Japanese Plum Yew. While several low-spreading selections of this shrub are available, the cultivar Fasticiata will grow 10 to 12 feet tall and 6 to 8 feet wide. Japanese Plum Yew will grow in sun or shade and is rarely bothered by deer. Cliera is another relatively narrow, upright evergreen that is great for hedges. This tough, adaptable shrub is covered in glossy green leaves. Cliera thrives in sun or shade, is drought-tolerant and deer-resistant, and will grow 10 to 15 feet tall and 6 to 8 feet wide. Flowering evergreens for screening. Evergreens with showy or fragrant blooms provide a bonus feature for landscapes, providing seasonal interest as well as year-round screening. Large evergreens with attractive flowers that can be used for screens include camellias and Fortune's tea olive. Although slow-growing, camellias make spectacular hedges, especially the fall-blooming Sasanqua varieties like Kanjiro and Setsugeka, each of which will grow to 10 feet tall. For best results, plant camellias in moist, well-drained soil in a site with afternoon shade. Fortune's tea olive has clusters of small white flowers that line the stems in fall, allowing their exceptional fragrance to drift through the landscape. The leaves of this dense evergreen are slightly spiny and are rarely browsed by deer. Fortune's tea olive is a long-lived shrub that eventually reaches 15 to 20 feet tall and 10 to 15 feet wide. It's a great choice for sunny or partly shaded areas where a large impenetrable screen is needed. This article is by Norman Winter. Shrub acts as art for garden. Officially, it is Oriental paperbush. Others call it Chinese paperbush or just paperbush, while some describe it as a mounding, suckering, deciduous shrub. I think it is like a beautiful piece of art in the garden. Like the names suggest, it has been used to make fine paper. Botanically speaking, it is known as Edgeworthia crescenta, and it resides in a family with 50 genera, mostly unknown to gardeners other than the Daphne, with its heavenly fragrance. The Edgeworthia is native to the Himalayan forest with a cold hardiness in zones 7 to 9. Several winter gold Edgeworthia are growing at the coastal Georgia Botanical Gardens in the Shade Garden and other areas where azaleas would be at home, and they are exquisite. This 6 to 8 foot mounding shrub is a shrub for all seasons. During the summer, its shape and foliage give the impression that it is related to the rhododendron. While you might hate the thought of it being deciduous when the deep green leaves have fallen, the plant will take you your breath away with its form and structure adorned with clusters of silver-sheened buds that you will treasure during the months leading up to the beginning of blooms in late winter. These buds start to open in mid-January, or when the weather pattern puts together a string of warm days. Hundreds of small, fragrant yellow flowers begin to open, lasting an extended period before spring arrives. In the spring, plant them in an area receiving morning sun and afternoon shade or high filtered light. The soil should be fertile, organic rich, and well drained. Prepare the soil by adding 3 to 4 inches of organic matter and till to a depth of 10 inches. If you have tight, compact soil, consider planting on raised beds. Plant the oriental paper bush much like you would an azalea and finish with a good layer of mulch. In Savannah and many other areas, we are plagued by high deer populations, and I am happy to report that the paper bush is not on the menu. Deer resistance and no pests make this a shrub to keep on your watch list. Though they are still not the staple at the garden center, there are over a half dozen varieties, so hopefully the situation will quickly improve. In our shade garden, situated under the canopy of tall pines, we have them near ferns, golden variegated forms of gardenias, Florida sunshine anise, a variety of hydrangeas, and azaleas. I assure you, winter gold paperbush will gather just as many oohs and ahs as any of those companion plants. One last thing. Honeybees seem to know when the paperbush blooming season commences. And from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Fancy Daylilies by Dorothy J. Pellet. Whether single-colored or intricately patterned, daylilies are practically unmatched for their adaptability and versatility in the garden. Their genetic heritage contains traits from species native to habitats ranging from bogs to rocky mountainsides. Now, thanks to the work of devoted breeders and the enthusiasm of passionate gardeners, choices include a vast range of flower colors, sizes, shapes, and patterns. And because daylilies also vary in height, foliage, and bloom season, they complement any garden. Creating color harmony is easy when you determine your requirements. Does your garden need a loose constellation of bright, bold stars or a tranquil pool of pale, creamy blooms? Modern daylilies are perfect for tying together many colored themes. Besides the traditional golds and oranges, they come in reds, pinks, purples, and whites with hints of color. Some of the interesting new varieties have a zone of different color, or a darker shade of the same color located between the throat and tips of the flower segments. So-called eyed daylilies have a zone of color on both petals and sepals. In addition to the striking eyed daylilies, there are many other patterned daylilies, each with a band, halo, or edging of color on the flower. Nearly all eyed daylilies include hundreds of named varieties with distinctive patterns. Daylilies are loosely grouped by their foliage habit as evergreen, deciduous, often called dormant, or semi-evergreen. Although cold hardiness is not strictly determined by foliage habit, groups provide a basis for choosing varieties. In general, evergreen daylilies are suited to USDA hardiness zones 6 through 9, where they grow much of the year. Some evergreens are also cold hardy, but the foliage dies back. Conversely, the foliage of deciduous types dies in winter, even in mild climates. Some varieties depend on a period of cold weather to stimulate vigorous spring growth, while others grow and bloom well in both the south and north. However, most are not well suited wherever summers typically include more than 90 days above 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Semi-evergreen comprises varieties that don't fall neatly into the other groups. Wherever you live, there are many Eide-Daylily options. Because of my cold winters, Zone 4, I choose deciduous and semi-evergreen varieties that tolerate the occasional open winter, one with little snow for insulation. But one evergreen earned its place here after six winters. Pandora's Box, a fragrant cream-colored beauty with a bright purple eye, and it grows in nearly all parts of the United States. Look for flowers with unusual color combinations, a long bloom season, and well-branched bloom stalks, so flowers are not closely bunched. Other features that add value include vigorous foliage and flowers that tolerate summer sun and moderate wind and rain. Flowers should have uniform petals and sepals that form a pleasing symmetrical shape, whether circular, triangular, or star-like. To learn about the possibilities for your area, visit local gardens. Because daylily bloom time can be variable, the best companions are foliage plants and flowering annuals that provide steady compatibility throughout the season. I planted Indy Charmer next to Pewter Vale Coral Bells, where both receive more than a half day of sun, but are shaded by woods from the hottest afternoon sun. By late July and early August, when the daylilies bloom, the coral bells' leaves have assumed the same lavender-purple hue as the daylily blooms. New ruby or purple-leaved coral bells, such as Montrose Ruby or Plum Pudding, could also create such color schemes. In warmer climates, however, they need more shade than daylilies do. For an exuberant variation on matching a daylily's eye color to companion plants, place a brilliant golden maroon daylily like Salome Jandee or Bold Tiger behind purple or burgundy petunias or Verbena canadensis homestead purple and gold dwarf marigolds. This verbena produces deep purple flower clusters all summer, and its lacy leaves contrast with upright daylily foliage.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.